Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm Mark Snyder. We're picking back up in Contact Report 260, which talks about Hitler and the Thule Society. This contact occurred on Tuesday, February 3rd, 1998. It was translated back in April 7th of 2010. Billy and Patah begin a conversation. They're talking about future world events, deceitful UFO claims. They talk a little bit about the HARP project, also about the Giza intelligences, Adolf Hitler and the Thule Society. So that's kind of where I wanted to jump in. That's on page 25 of this contact. So if you're new to the show and you don't know who Billy Meyer is, I'll try to swing back a little later and make this a little clearer. But first thing that Billy says is, then I have another question, and indeed it is in reference to Adolf Hitler, about whom Semyase, your daughter, once said something before. I have here the 36th contact from Monday, the 20th of 1975. So Billy is talking to a man named Patah. Patah is allegedly an extraterrestrial human from a star system called the Pleiaden star system. Their world is known as Era. It's about 500 probably light years away, and then some 80 light years beyond the Pleiades itself. So they live in a different space-time configuration. Billy Meyer lives in Switzerland and has been a contactee his whole life. Patah is the commander of their mothership, and occasionally he still has conversations with Billy. And this is one of those conversations, like I said, that took place back in 1998. So Billy is referencing a contact that he had with Semyase, who is Patah's daughter. I know this is a little complicated if you're new to the show, but in any case, Billy reads aloud here to Patah what Semyase said back in Contact Report 36, which would be a good one to go back to, which I haven't looked at in a while. But Semyase said, Adolf Hitler was in many respects a genius. His knowledge ranged from a variety of areas of art and technology concerning a variety of sciences, up to the use of the power of suggestion. In his eternal form, he was an incarnate life form of very good values. And this is extremely different from what we're taught about Hitler. You know, we're taught he was this monster and he was insane, and he did go a little crazy near the end of his life, but we'll get back to that. Nevertheless, he wasn't a man of highly developed spirit, but rather a man of intellect and reason, who was destined to lead the overall earthly politics and economy. Now, Hitler, according to these extraterrestrials, was destined to lead the earth. I mean, he was going to lead many nations on the earth. And he was a good guy. In the beginning, he was on the right path. Let me continue here. He would lead politics and economy as well as all nations in a certain positive direction in order to create a powerful united world and earth humanity. So Hitler, if it wasn't for World War II, if it wasn't for these Giza intelligences, who were a very negative splinter group of the Pleiaden, Hitler would have been a very positive force. So he would have united the world, and we would create a peaceful, united world and Earth humanity. But it turned out to be just the opposite. For this purpose, he was educated and incarnated at this place. So the Pleiaden say he was educated and incarnated on the Earth here to bring about a peaceful earthly politics to lead the world in a positive direction, to unite the world. But just the opposite occurred because of this group of extraterrestrials called the Giza Intelligences, which we'll get to shortly. He was destined to give a new style to the Earth through a positive and enforced nonviolence and to initiate new forms of development. This was very strictly controlled and monitored, but ultimately all efforts were in vain, and he was unable to fill his task in the way it was provided. Through the leaders of the Thule Society at the time, as well as through the clairvoyant Hanneson, the Giza Intelligence succeeded in taking possession of Adolf Hitler's being and misusing them for their dark and malicious purposes. So the Giza Intelligences were a group of extraterrestrials that had a base far below the Giza Plateau, far under the Great Pyramid, in these old cubicle constructions that were 73,000 years old. They had a ship, an extraterrestrial ship, some smaller ships, some guards down there. They had a counterfeit cross, crown of thorns, and a blood-encrusted nail that were such good duplicates, our scientists could have never figured out that they weren't authentic. And I don't know exactly what they were going to do with these artifacts. I don't think they ever got the chance to bring them out into public. But the Clarion say the Giza Intelligences were deceiving the world through religion, through miracles. And Billy was taken down to see these Giza Intelligences with one of his other contacts, a woman named Askett, who was a woman from the Tao universe. And Billy met with her when he was about 16 years old in the middle 1950s. She brought a ship to Switzerland to pick him up, a robotic craft, and then they went on this trip, far below the Giza Plateau. Let me read to you what Askett had to say about these Giza Intelligences. She says, "I hereby speak of the extraterrestrial race, which here since ancient times wanted to gain supremacy over the Earth humanity, and according to always again unfold the glow and flame of the various religions and always new sects, because only through that may they obtain their goal. For thousands of years, they deceived the earth humans with religious miracles and visions of every kind in order to maintain and yet further increase their religious delusion." The Giza Intelligences can be traced all the way back to about 11,500 years ago, where there was one of the descendants of a man named Eris the Barbarian, who was a very negative individual who started the war between Atlantis and Lemuria. One of his offspring, his descendants, 11 generations away, was really what I call the beginning of this group of negative extraterrestrials that have been on the Earth they were on the Earth all the way up until the late 1970s. Let me continue. "Out of these grounds, they have created a mighty station of the pyramid, under the Pyramid of Giza, in order to guide from there their religious delusional events of the earth. Self-evidently, they had to bring their great ship into security, so they constructed the underground hangar where their ship had already been stored for thousands of years." So Billy got to see the ship when Askett and him went far below the Giza Plateau, and they went through this tunnel system below the Giza Plateau. She had a technology that would make them invisible. And they went down and they went into this large hallway where they could see light coming from everywhere and yet nowhere. And Billy got to see this ship and got to see these guards. Anyway, Askett continues, "They direct and lead everything from under there that serves the purposes of religion and serves the religious and sectarian enslavement of the earth human. And in order to top it all off, they had utensils some decades ago, which you have seen there. Now, this is kind of goes on, and it talks a little bit about they are as false and as inane as the attitude of this spacefaring group itself, because the true utensils of Emmanuel is what the term the Meyer material uses for the person that is commonly called Jesus today. They have a different take on actually what happened, but we'll maybe get to that later. Because the true utensils of Emmanuel and also the cross are already long rotted away and decayed to dust. The imitation of the utensil succeeds as deceptively genuine. Remember the cross, the crown of thorns, and the blood-encrusted nail that Billy saw. They were imitations. Let me continue. And this falsification would not be recognized even by an expert of your science, with all the devices and apparatuses available to him. And those kinds of things, the evil-minded group work with the most extreme precision and greatest ability. So they were very, in many ways, very intelligent. They are a splinter group of the Pleiaron themselves. They're kind of a terrorist group or a criminal group of the Pleiaron. So, Aska continues. She says, the life forms seen by you are the guards of the secret station. The secret station is what Billy saw far below the Giza Plateau. And she says, they kill every life form which is ever lost in there. Their technical possibilities for the positioning of distorting radiations are, at any rate, very small. Subsequently, we can go in there in an invisible form. So, Askin and Billy went in there. They were invisible. And the plan of these Giza intelligences was to use these falsified Christ utensils to create a kind of hallucination. Askin explains that the Earth human at that time, they're gone now, but at that time was already under the influence of these malicious beings. And they had the ability to put people in a trance-like state. And when you're put in this trance-like state, you will see images that are transmitted. And there was one individual that they did this to. Let me continue. I think it was a guy named Reinhold Schmidt. Let me continue. He thereby perceives and feels everything exactly as if he hears, sees, feels, and experiences them in reality, although he only lies and sleeps somewhere, and everything is impressed into him as a dream. So anyway, Reinhold Schmidt was another individual who was influenced by these Giza intelligences. Now, the Giza intelligences influenced the Thule Society in World War II, and they influenced another individual named Hermann Steinschneider. And Hermann Steinschneider was the member of the Thule Society that kind of became close friends of Hitler. And Steinschneider was also known at that time as Eric Jonasson. His real name was Hermann Steinschneider. And he had more influence over Adolf Hitler as time went on. He taught Hitler some of his techniques in oratory to kind of be overdramatic. Let me read here. It says, at that same time, Steinschneider became even more powerful in the course of time with respect to his domination over Adolf Hitler. So Steinschneider was the member of the Thule Society that influenced Hitler, but Steinschneider was influenced by these extraterrestrials. So Steinschneider and the Giza intelligences pushed Hitler off on the wrong path. Otherwise, he would have been a very great world leader. he had a very positive influence on the people of the earth. At one time, Hitler was actually being telepathically impulsed by the Plejaren, and he fell under the influence of Steinschneider and the Gies intelligences, and it wasn't even possible for the Plejaren to stay in touch with him anymore. And it says here, Adolf Hitler had already been instructed by our forces through telepathic impulses in his earliest youth in terms of his determinations and guideline, and indeed on an ongoing basis. So anyway, that is a quick overview of Hermann Steinschneider, the Thule Society. This may be the first time you ever heard that Adolf Hitler actually would have been a great leader. He would have had a very positive influence on the world if it weren't for this negative extraterrestrial group. As I said, they had their headquarters far below the Giza Plateau. They attacked the Semyasi Silver Star Center back in 1978. The Semyasi Silver Star Center is in Schmidruti, Switzerland. That's Billy's headquarters for the FIGU group. That attack occurred in 1978. The extraterrestrials, the Plejaren, put a shield, some kind of shield, over the building for a while. They captured these extraterrestrials, these Giza intelligences. They deported them, stripped them of all their technology except the most basic survival equipment, and they put them on a remote prison planet. I think at this point they're all dead. But for thousands of years, the Giza intelligences deceived humankind with miracles and visions. They had, you know, the appearance of angels and gods, and the lineage of the Giza intelligences starts at Eris the 11th. And this was sometime about 11,500 years ago, after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. The Earth was devastated. These extraterrestrials came here from Beta Centauri, and they set themselves up as gods with a small g. And the first one of them was Eris the 11th, who ruled for several centuries. He was killed by his third son, Jehovan. And then Jehovan ruled the same way, called himself the creator of the universe, ruled for centuries and centuries. He was thrown out of power by his son. He was killed. His son was a guy named Jehave. Jehave ruled for many centuries, was thrown out of power by Erisame. Erisame was the first one to go underground. By this time, they had to go underground. Erisame ruled for many centuries. He was thrown out of power by a guy called Hen, who is also known as Jehovah. The Meyer material says, and I know this is very controversial, that the God of the Old Testament was the same Jehovah who ruled for hundreds of years, many centuries, and was also killed by Comagall the First. Comagall the First ruled for many centuries, and Comagall II took over and ruled up until about the 70s. Now, I say ruled. At this time, the Giza intelligences were underground. They were trying to influence the Earth through religion, but they had a technology called these kind of telenotic impulses, which will linger and still affect us for a couple hundreds of years. So that's kind of a brief overview of a very interesting topic. Let me continue here in Contact Report 260. Semyase is talking more about Adolf Hitler. She says, he was in many respects a genius. His knowledge ranged over many different regions of technology, over many sciences. He even had knowledge of the use of nature's forces. In his form, he was an incarnate creature of good worth. He was not a human of highly developed spirit, but he would have, he was destined to give by power a new shape to the world and to initiate new forms of development. This was carefully controlled and watched, but still all the work was in vain. He was not able to carry out his mission. Through the full society in Germany, the Giza intelligence was able to possess Adolf Hitler and to misuse him for their evil purposes. So he was forced to treat against his own destiny and to carry out acts that did not even go along with his own will. So you could say, I guess you could say he was mind controlled at some point. And at that time, Semyase explained she wasn't allowed to say anymore. By the way, Semyase, it was Billy's third contact. She would land her ship there in the mid-70s in Switzerland, near Hinterschmidrite. She would land in the middle of the day, and in the summer, and Billy and her would sit down and talk under a tree. Of course, they couldn't do this for very long, as more and more people found out about the contacts. Anyway, let me continue here. Semyase wasn't allowed to say anymore, she explained, but maybe it is different today, such that I might learn something from you. So this is Billy speaking. He's speaking to Ptah. You once said before that Adolf Hitler also had or would have the task of creating a united Earth. And Ptah says that was actually so. That is correct. The path that he then took, however, even with terror and war, was absolutely wrong and was neither in his destiny nor in any guidelines assigned to him, nor even in our interests. The reason for his wrongly chosen path quite early on, when he secretly came into contact with a fool society of that time, in consequence of which he also came into contact with his Hermann Steinschneider, who also belonged to the fool society and supported its unfair goals and called himself the clairvoyant Eric John Hannesson. Steinschneider, he moved in the circles of the major Nazi figures, among whom he had many clients, so even also Adolf Hitler, who became enslaved to him, and indeed even before he seized the leadership for himself. Steinschneider / Hannesson emerged as a middleman between the Thule Society and Hitler, and so to speak, directed Hitler according to the Thule Society's will. The efforts of the leader at that time of the Thule Society went out for the acquisition of world domination. Consequently, already very early on, they allowed Steinschneider to influence and shape Hitler in this direction. By what means then this began in accordance with their will, with terror, to murder, to trigger World War II in the end. At that same time, Steinschneider became even more powerful in the course of time with respect to his domination over Adolf Hitler, which didn't appeal to various people who were against Hitler and his machinations. The consequence of this was that they allowed Steinschneider to be murdered in 1933. So Steinschneider was murdered in 1933 because he got so close to Hitler. There was probably some jealousy there. But in any event, this didn't change anything in Hitler's attitude. And of course, therefore, he became more and more of a monster, as you would say. It's interesting to know that Adolf Hitler was born April 20th in 1889 in Braunau, Upper Austria. And Hermann Steinschneider was born in Vienna, also in the year 1889. They were both Austrians. What is to be said further in relation to the question is that Adolf Hitler had already been instructed by our forces through telepathic impulses in his earliest youth. So you could almost say that Hitler was a contactee. He was getting impulses from the Pleiaren in his earliest youth in terms of determinations and guidelines, and indeed on an ongoing basis at every place where he always stayed. Thus, listen to what it says here, thus he was also under constant control. This is amazing. At the same time, he learned a lot and everything started off very well until he went to Vienna to enjoy an artistic education, at which he failed. From that point in time, he rapidly fell more and more toward the negative and evil. Consequently, he soon fell outside of our control, and our telepathic impulses attempts remained fruitless. So you know the story pretty much from here. Hitler developed an unhealthy ambition. He became fanatic. He had a hatred for all life that he kind of came through. And he eventually brought a lot of misery to the people of the earth. So, there's more here, but that's pretty much the gist of it for now. The Meyer material is very interesting, and it covers a lot of different areas, and you learn a lot in the Meyer information that you would never get from the rest of history. It looks like, hi, Eve. Hi, Gemini. Hi, After Dark. Thanks for showing up. We got another guest in. Any case, I want to kind of continue on here. I like this particular area of the Meyer material. I think it's very, very interesting. Billy, he's in his late 70s now. He lives in this tiny mountain village in Switzerland. And it's about 52 minutes east of Zurich in a beautiful forested area. And one of his major goals in life is the spiritual teachings. And Billy in Switzerland has been teaching something called the Teaching of the Spirit that talks about, one thing that it talks about very much is the human spirit. And we all have a human spirit. It's a fragment of the universal consciousness. It resides in an area of our middle brain called the superior colliculus. And the superior colliculus is the part of our brain that's associated with sight. And the superior colliculus is the area that the spirit form enters 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. So that's when the spirit form comes into the body of a child. And it brings with it the material consciousness, the new material consciousness. See, we have a spiritual consciousness, which is our spirit form. And the spirit form has something called the Gemüt. The Gemüt controls the thoughts and the feelings associated with the spiritual consciousness. And we have the material consciousness and something called the psyche. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. So you got these two aspects of yourself. The material consciousness is you in this lifetime, in this personality. Now, this personality will be different than your next personality, and it was different than your previous personality. The spirit is created by creation, by the universal consciousness, in order to help it evolve to a higher level. Sometimes in the Meyer material, the spirit, the human spirit, is referred to as the spirit form, or the Geist form, as it's called in the German. It's an indestructible, eternally living entity. It resides in your human brain and in the superior colliculus. And the spirit within the human is called the bearer of the creative realm. Everybody has a spirit. Now, unfortunately, we here on Earth are very good at developing these unpleasant habits of using false word concepts. And we have these false ideas of spirit illness and spirit delusion. But the Meyer material explains that your spirit form cannot be harmed in any way. There's nothing in the material realm that can harm your spirit form. It cannot be sick. It cannot be confused. It cannot be disturbed. It cannot be deranged. Now, your material consciousness can be deranged. It can become feeble-minded. It can become confused. The spirit is a part of the creation. It's a minute part piece of creation. It's untouchable. It has something called the swinging wave. Now, these swinging waves come from the electromagnetic realm of life. And these swinging waves can sometimes have immense power. And the gamut has the ability to harness these swinging waves and kind of pass them off to the psyche in the material consciousness. Now, at our current form of development, we cannot really harness these swinging waves yet, but in later lifetimes we will. Semyasi, for example, burned some photographs from the that were taken by Billy when they traveled in time and forward in time to see the earthquake in San Francisco. And you can do telekinesis through the use of these waves. The Schwingen, as it's in the German, it's a noun. The electromagnetic swinging waves in the teaching of the spirit, again, are these periodically built up electric and magnetic fields. They're not bound to any matter, but they include energies and forces which can have tremendous might. So what happens is these kings of wisdom in the past, these quote-unquote ishwishes or gods, if you will, which are just human beings at the fifth evolutionary stage, you know, people that have had more lifetimes than us, learn to harness the swinging waves, and they develop these great abilities, these great, great powers. Now, unfortunately, we here on the earth, we come up with these words and terms which are sometimes inappropriate. And we have these fantasy-drenched teachings. But the Meyer material tries to get through a lot of this. Now, the psyche, unfortunately, is sometimes confused with the soul. The Meyer material doesn't really talk much about anything called the soul. Probably the closest analogy to that concept is the spirit form. But again, as I said, the spiritual consciousness is controlled by this factor called the gemut. And we have the psyche, which is controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. And within the spiritual consciousness, we have something called the Empfinden block, which is, and that's the area that allows us to sense the radiating love of creation. Now, in the material consciousness, we have something called the feeling. And this is the entire block of all the feelings and their possible impulsations. Now, a lot of feelings at our current level of evolution, we're not even able to really feel everything, all the different shades of nuances of feelings that we will at some point in the future. So the spirit form It never sleeps. It never dies. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong if you've learned to pay attention to it. So the spirit form is the part of you that never dies. And when you do physically die, your spirit form will leave the body along with your material consciousness, and it will go into the spiritual realm. The information associated with your previous life goes into an area called the overall consciousness block, where it's processed, and what you learned in your life of lasting value is transformed into its essence, meaning that hope and love and logic and discernment and things like that are brought down into their essence, into their neutral, positive form, and then they're absorbed by the spirit form. So the spirit form is getting strengthened and becoming wiser in the spiritual realm after you've died. So death is just the end of the physical body. And in the spirit realm, the spirit form is hard at work learning and absorbing from your previous life. And at the appropriate time, the spirit form will be then put back in the body of the child for another round of learning in the material realm. And that's the purpose for these reincarnations, because that's how we evolve our consciousness. That is the purpose of our lifetime. Now, I think that the closer we get to the spirit realm, the more we have kind of a sense of peace and tranquility. Because when Billy was on the Great Spacer, when they were doing these hyperleaps, he would get this sense of tranquility and peace. In fact, I think we yearn for that. It's kind of a yearning we have in the material life that we do not have the peace that exists in the spirit realm. So each time that they went on a hyperleap, which was when they jumped from star to star, the ship and everything in the ship just for a short time gets transferred into what they call fine matter. And so Billy, his body is almost in the spiritual state while they're jumping. So, and he documented how he felt while they were doing these hyperleaps. So, and it sounds something like this: "But now I look at everything in peace and with clear eyes, and I can't describe the infinite vastness and size and the splendor and the beauty of this universe that stretches out before me. The words fail me. This deep tranquility and unbelievable peacefulness flowing through me is eternity itself, the absolute timelessness, which obviously is no longer subject to outside influences such as the restlessness, strife, and worries that trouble the consciousness." So I guess when you're in the spirit realm, there is no restlessness, there's no strife, there's no worries. And that's what Billy remembers from these hyperleaps. He continues here, "I realized suddenly that during these few seconds, I was in the eternity itself, experiencing myself as eternity, where I only exist as fine spiritual matter, and I am completely free of all that can influence my material life. I actually traveled to eternity for a few seconds." It's amazing. I have studied this particular passage for years, and it continues to have new meaning to me. So they do another hyperleap, but this is a longer hyperleap. And then Billy describes the feeling, the experience in a different way. This is documented in Contact Report 31. If you want to read this yourself. "This radiant light, such profound love, calm and peace, Oh, now I understand. I can't see or hear, but I am finding. I feel, I live, I am finding. How beautiful is this peace? And this concept of this tremendous peace from the spiritual realm is described in Billy's book, The Goblet of Truth, in chapter 25, verse 137. It says, therefore, you humankind of earth, you must strive and evolve as individuals in yourself from out of your own consciousness. Now, this striving to evolve out of our consciousness is talked about in Billy's book called The Way to Live, and there's a creational natural law called striving. And let me read from this book on page 142 that talks about the creational natural law. Anyway, there are laws of the universe, and if we align our lives with these laws of the universe, our lives go much better. One of these laws is the law of striving. You should continue to strive and work as much as possible. Develop yourself. That means you work very hard at your day job. Also work developing yourself in your hobbies. Continually, always pushing forward to improve yourself. Let me read what Billy has to say here. The fact of the new time and of the current time is that the human being has newly discovered the ur-creational law of evolutive striving. Also, the age of Aquarius itself pushes forward with horrendous power. It's the age that we're in. We're somehow influenced by this radiation coming from the center of our galaxy. This is the age of Aquarius, da-da-da, you've heard the song. It pushes forward with horrendous power. It spurs on the striving of the human being. So that's really what's being pushed here, is our own sense of striving. It is the time of upthrusting truth, which demands intelligence, reason, logic, and knowledge and progress. And in this time, people do not want to believe any longer, nor do they want to be connected any longer with assumption. Rather, people solely want to know. And that's one of the differences in this current age. He or she is no longer satisfied with this weaker kind of knowledge that we used to have. People truly want to know. So let me continue here with Billy's experience on the Great Spacer Shift. Oh, no, I digress. I was in the Goblet of Truth here. And it says here, therefore, you humankind of Earth, you must strive and evolve as individuals in yourselves from out of your own consciousness, as well as out of your own thoughts and feelings, in order to come to the truth and to the fine spiritual perceiving of the love of creation. That fine spiritual perceiving comes from that empfinden block. That's a part of the gemut, which is a part of your spiritual consciousness. So there can be true love and harmony, as well as freedom and peace in you, in order to then also carry forth these high values, so that you humankind of Earth, may profit from them, and so that everything may turn to the best well-being amongst you. And this is the age that we're in, the age where our thinking can start to become real, that we learn through the law of striving to literally turn our thoughts into reality. And the human being who follows the creational striving longs for rationality, intelligent logic, recognizing, and understanding. And this longing comes from your deepest, your inner self. All knowledge, recognition, understanding, and grasping and experience for all things arise and can only arise out of the deepest depths of the human consciousness, and therefore from the innermost part of the human being. And that's where you determine the truth for yourself in your innermost thoughts, your innermost feelings, your innermost considerations. Because the inner dimensions of the human are endless, and the spirit is the wonder of all wonders. If you are happy, your happiness comes from within you. So we in this age learn wisdom and we start to evolve our consciousness. So one of the things we have to watch out for is thinking in incorrect ways, because unfortunately our thoughts have tremendous power. Fortunately, our thoughts have tremendous power. Now, your unconscious mind has also very, very tremendous power. And the rule is that the human being most of the time doesn't even think consciously. Most of our thoughts are unconscious, and you can bring your worst fears into fruition by thinking unconsciously. So be very careful about this and try not to think unconsciously, because the mites of the thoughts are pretty incredible. And you can have all kinds of unconscious thoughts which can very much negatively affect your life. Unconscious thoughts can lead to drug addiction, to addictions to your own desires. Unconscious thoughts can bring things into fruition that you do not want in your life at all. The unconscious mind consists of things that are automatic and are not always available to introspection. And Billy says, even though the human being wants good and positive things, we often prevent the achievements of the good and positive things because we have wrongly steered thoughts, and we maintain hopes and wishes that are not good and not good for us. And we sometimes have these yearnings or thoughts that bring suffering. And some of the suffering are indicating that we're not having the law of harmony. Now, the law of harmony is this. The law of being says that we should have a neutral, positive thinking in our mind. So all the time, you should be continually looking. If you're feeling that something's really bothering you, I don't know, pick your favorite issue, and you're constantly thinking about that issue, ask yourself, am I neutral about this issue? Am I really neutral? And if you're, well, if I'm obsessing over it, maybe I'm not neutral. So the point of is in controlling your thoughts and maintaining them along the right path, you'll have this neutrality. So neutral and positive are two forces that should always be together. If you separate the negative or the positive, then the human goes into the state of asartam, or out of control of the good human nature. So the goal is to keep the negative and the positive. If you have the negative and the positive, then you're neutral. Have you ever noticed how people in love, quote unquote, can have the most horrible fights? Because the form of love that they're in is, it's either good, very, very good, or very, very bad. It's not neutral positive. And that's why there's a 70% divorce rate, because our society doesn't teach this law of harmony. And let me continue here in the reading. In this form, incidents of suffering are indicators that the law of harmony is disregarded and broken, and that one is there not a living according to the law of being, which is directed at progress, love, peace, wisdom, and true inner freedom. So it's quite clear that if the positive and the negative part of the thing is equalized, then there's harmony. So what we're trying to get to is balance in our thinking. And in the Goblet of Truth, chapter 22, verse 13, it says, "It is necessary that you live in ample harmony with the powers that are in you and around you, as well as with the disharmonious powers that stand into contradiction." You know, one of the laws of striving is that you will face obstacles in your striving. So that's part of the existence of the negative and positive, always together. Let me continue here in talking about striving. "It is the human being's nature, as it is with every other existence, to strive. In the course of Ur meaning the most ancient eternal evolution, for that which is higher and more absolutely developed. So we're constantly striving towards the higher. You know, improve your thoughts, improve your thinking, improve your personal self. The human being should be striving for knowledge and wisdom. A complete calming will start to fall over you if you're striving hard enough. This calm is the absolute certainty that arises from what's called practical experience." Now, this is the kind of knowledge that we're going to be achieving during this age, the age of Aquarius, as it's called. It is the case that solely the creational evolutional striving in the human being is determining so that one arises from the other in progressive form. Industrious thinking, an idea comes about, which on further striving pursued becomes cognition, which, and if there's further striving, forms into knowledge. If through the human being's constant striving, the knowledge is achieved. So that's what we're shooting for, this experiential knowledge. So once we get experiential knowledge, we have an incontrovertible logic. So you don't need beliefs and assumptions when you have this logic. And when we get to this point in our thinking, we no longer need assumptions. Let me continue in the reading here. "Therefore, a human being who has ascertained the effective truth to such a degree can no longer have anything made evident to him from the outside, because he, in his striving, which is conditioned by creational law, fathoms all evidence, and he gains knowledge and cognitions himself." So this is part of the transformation that goes on in this age. If you don't do your evolutive striving, if you fall under the influence of religions or laziness, you'll experience something called stagnation. And it's when you're young, I'm sure you remember being bored. And this is because of not following the evolutive striving. And those are the human beings in whom stagnation called forth by religions and sects and wrong philosophies and irrational worldviews. This stagnation, if we follow evolutive striving, will fall away. So this is one of the creational natural laws, one of the laws of nature, is this evolutive striving. We've talked about it many times before. I don't think it can be emphasized enough. The other creational natural law that is so important is the law of love. Now, the Meyer material says there is a false love, a love that's based on kind of romantic thinking that tends to be very unstable. And that's not the kind of love that the Meyer material emphasizes. We're supposed to have a love that's called wisdom-conditioned love. Billy first experienced wisdom-conditioned love when he was about 4 years old on a mild night in May in the year 1941 when he sat down and looked up at a beautiful starry sky, and he heard this voice in his head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." This is wisdom-conditioned love. This is not romantic love. Billy said, "I recognized that the light which the stars emitted was a light in the visible spectrum. However, the light of true love remained invisible, creational for all great times." So, as it's explained at some point in the Meyer material, this love literally radiates from creation. That's why when you look up at a beautiful starry sky, you just kind of go, wow. Not only from the visible aspect of it, but there's an invisible aspect, because you start to understand the awesome intellect behind this incredible creation, because the incredible splendor of nature is the visible love of the expression of creation. And as Billy said at that evening, or later he wrote, "And indeed the beaming stars were there, which stirred in me an unfamiliar longing for the vast distance and faraway worlds." So Billy, at a very young age, came to start to understand this first creational law of love, which he said that everything which exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and true love of the mighty universal consciousness called creation. Now, there's nothing romantic in the sense of flowers and the interaction of human beings here. What we're doing in our thinking is literally appreciating this incredible universe that's around us, okay? This has nothing to do with what we think of in terms of romantic love. Oh, there's just kind of romantic quality to it. But this is wisdom-conditioned love. You're never going to have an argument with the universe unless you're really a nutty person. But you'll never have instability in that aspect of your appreciation. So that's the first creation law of love. The second law is what we talked about, the striving. There was another thing Billy wrote about this wisdom-conditioned love. It says, "However, this oneness and connectedness with all and everything is the result of the might and the immeasurable love of creation, which gives everything selflessly and demands no payment for it." Now, our biggest problem is our ignorance concerning creation and its laws and recommendations. But anyway, I appreciate everyone that came to the show, and we'll hopefully meet with you on Wednesday. We'll have a guest. I'm working on it. Have a great evening. See ya.